welcome to the latest episode of the Minorities in Publishing podcast. I'm Jen, and if you're a new or returning listener, then you know that the podcast can be found on Tumblr at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com and Minorities in Pub on Twitter. This is going to be kind of a wide-arching, dynamic episode, parentheses S for episodes, because we're here with one batch of the We Need Diverse Books internship crew from 2016, which is very exciting to me. And when I told people, oh, I'm going to be interviewing the interns, and they said, oh my God, that's amazing. Ask them what they think. I said, well, that's how interviews go. But I think it was just so exciting for people to hear from those who were putting a toe into the industry and knowing what we don't know, especially for those of us like me who've been in it for 10 years. So this is exciting. This is really exciting. And I say exciting every episode, but this is highly exciting. So we'll go around the table and everyone will introduce themselves.
Sure. Hi, my name is Pia Saras, and I'm a marketing and publicity intern at Lee & Lowe Books.
Hello, my name is Talia Chavez, and I am the Children's Managing Editorial Intern at HarperCollins.
And I'm Manny Blasco. I'm an editorial intern at HarperCollins Children's Books.
As people know who listen to the podcast, the first question is always the how, the why. And for your end, it really is kind of like, how did this happen? Why publishing? How did you hear about it? For the most part, usually the answer is random. I just heard about it in college. I didn't know you can do this. I didn't know it was a job possibility. But I wonder if nowadays it's different. People are hearing about it earlier in life. People are hearing about it or being encouraged to pursue publishing and the different facets of publishing. So I'm eager to hear about how each of you are landing in it so far.
Okay, I mean, I can start first.
Sure.
I feel like my earliest memory and the contact with the publishing industry even goes back to like elementary school. I can recall, I think an editor, I can't remember from what company, but some editor had visited our classroom and talked a little bit about, you know, kind of what they do and how they like, you know, publish books and publish our favorites. Mm-hmm. And that was always something that was in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. So not that I knew I wanted to pursue it per se, you know, after all those years, but as I started to come into my own a little more, and I really enjoyed writing and reading. I mean, Harry Potter hit, and like, you know, that affected everyone. So, you know, obviously I was also part of that.
Like a plague.
Exactly.
Like a plague. It's kind of like what they say about lemonade, right? There's like, there's before lemonade and there's after lemonade.
Lemonade.
I feel like there's before Harry Potter and there's after Harry Potter.
True. Even like Lord of the Rings was something that I was like always obsessed with. So yeah, this was always something that was kind of building. And then by the time I got into college, I knew I wanted to be like an English major, you know, read all this stuff, did all the writing, and I still was like, I'm not entirely sure, I don't know exactly what I want to do, but I know I want it to have to do with storytelling and, yeah, like writing or editing in some way. And I was like, you know, publishing, that's something that I'm familiar with and something that I'd like to try out.
Well, for me, I'd always been a very avid reader growing up, and there came a point when I was around 12 years old that I started just reading what my mom was reading, because I decided, you know, if my mom's reading something, chances are I'm going to find it interesting, 12 years old or not. So there was this one book that she had by Penny Vincenzi. It was called No Angel, and it was all about this woman named Celia Litton, who was this big hotshot in the publishing world in the UK. And this was my first taste of that even being a job possibility. But I just read through that series like crazy, and I loved the idea of working with books and working with editors and getting to do all these amazing things. And sure, it was a glamorous view of the publishing world, but that was what really stuck in my head all those years. And then now that I got a little bit older, I realized I really wanted to get into children's publishing, because that's just always been a genre I've gone back to no matter what. It's just what I love the most. So this is where I ended up now, and I'd like to think that 12-year-old me would be pretty proud.
Is it glamorous?
Is it glamorous? not as glamorous as they showed on Younger or something, if anyone's seen that TV show. No, but
I feel like there's bits and pieces.
Yes.
Yeah.
That definitely, like,
we're still living in the city. I can still see the World Trade Center from the window. Mm-hmm. That's pretty intense. Mm-hmm.
So the backdrop is glamorous.
The backdrop is like glamorous. Me, not so much.
My apartment, not so much.
Sure. I feel like I had a sort of belated introduction into publishing. I wasn't really cognizant that it was a thing until fairly like late in college. Mm-hmm. So up until this point, I've been pretty seriously considering going into teaching. I'm a double major in education and comparative literature for French. And on one hand, I have like a deep and abiding care for children, and I love learning about ethnic identity development in urban school districts. And on the other hand, I have like a love for words and writing and books. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I thought that teaching was the only way to combine two things that I'm really passionate about. And in college, I took a course on adolescent literature where we learned that the books taught in high schools are just egregiously white, male-centric, heteronormative, mm-hmm. Totally unreflective of students in the United States, and can be like agents of disempowerment in that sense. And as I looked into it, I found out about We Need Diverse Books and Lee and Lowe's Diversity Baseline Survey, mm-hmm. and it just clicked for me that this could be another way to support children's educational paths. So I sent out my fleet of applications, mm-hmm. and in a nice, I guess, circular turn of events, I ended up interning at Lee and Lowe and with the support of WMDB. Mm-hmm. So I guess I just found publishing as another way to get kids really excited about reading.
Yeah. It was similar for me because I was in my senior or junior year of undergrad, mm-hmm. and I was an English major. And it was kind of like someone came out from like the corner and said, "Hey, you heard about publishing?" I said, "No. What is this? I don't like children. I don't want to teach." And I did that. I taught after school, and I was like, "Yeah, mm-hmm. that's not okay.
Not the way to go."
Yeah. I teach now workshops, but they're adults, and yeah, it's fine. But yeah, it was kind of, I don't know if that's late in life, but it's definitely like not where they would want us to. Like they mm-hmm. prefer the 12-year-olds. You know, the young readers be like, "I want to go into this." Fast forward, you all submitted your internship application. So had you heard about the WNDB internship grant before you submitted your internship applications or after?
After.
Before.
Okay. Mm. So with that in mind, would you have been able to do this if it weren't paid?
No.
Absolutely not. No, that was not my financial reality. Mm-hmm. Especially being from California, interning in New York is rent and airfare and higher cost of living. Mm.
So are any of you local?
New Jersey.
Local New Jersey,
yeah.
But
we'll
at the same
it.
Time.
We'll count. California, not
so California. California's a little further away.
Suffice to say, you would have not done an internship at all if you had not gotten a stipend.
For me, where I live in New Jersey, it would have cost me $600 a month just to travel here. Mm-hmm. And that probably wouldn't have been doable. Manny and I actually both just graduated from college, so mm-hmm. loans are coming fast and furious. And I mean, with the traveling, even my internship is paid, thankfully, but with the traveling, I'm technically making $28 a day. Without the internship, there's just no way I would have been able to afford anything. Mm-hmm. Car insurance, phone, mm-hmm. travel. It just wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
I think going off of that, I think it's one of those kinds of industries where it is very much about being passionate about, and you really have to love it, which we all do, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's just hard sometimes the reality has to set in that it's not necessarily the highest paying industry. Mm-hmm. And so if it was like an unpaid internship, I think it would have been mm-hmm. A big blow to mm-hmm. a lot of us. And mm-hmm. without the grant, I mean, also as well, mm-hmm. not being able to do necessarily what we want to do because, mm-hmm. Again, the realities of money
yeah.
and stuff.
Yeah, this glamorous backdrop of New mm-hmm. York is pretty prohibitively priced.
It
yes.
is. Sadly. So I don't know if any of you had read the, there was a New York Times article a few months back, and it was kind of enraging. Let's all find our zen right now. And it was about unpaid internships, and they specifically spoke to publishing, and they interviewed some people who would stay on record, some people who wouldn't be on record, obviously, because it's a kind of tenuous conversation, and a couple of people at literary agencies, and I'll be interviewing the literary agency interns later on, said that there was this expectation of, well, if you really wanted this job, you would do it no matter what, right? Like, even if it was unpaid, that enthusiasm should push you through to do a good job. And it comes back to that whole exposure doesn't pay rent, you know? It was really entitled of that person. I don't know who the person was. They decided to remain off, you know, unquoted in terms of their name. But then some other people said similarly. I think someone was at Writer's House, which is a very big literary agency, and someone was at another Big Five publisher. And so I'd love to know your feelings on that. You're probably like, F you. Done. Next question. But yeah, but this expectation of if you're enthusiastic enough, I mean, what do you say to people who kind of have that mindset when you're trying to get into the industry, especially when we're marginalized?
Yeah, that's totally a ridiculous stance to take. It feeds into this myth that meritocracy is real, and if you just work hard enough and you do X, Y, and Z, then you can be like successful too. And we all know that that's totally not the reality for an enormous number of people. And I think that, like, especially coming from my background, my parents immigrated here, and I know that they sacrificed a lot for their family to grow up in the United States. I never want to ask anything of them again, and much less financial support. Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's writing an article like that or saying things like that probably could have afforded it due to somebody else's dime. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that anyone who's willing to say that who couldn't afford it is either bitter about their own past or the fact that they had to work for free and they don't want future generations to do that, but it's just not a standard that we should be holding the future up to, especially not in this economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, again, just going back to, like, it's again one of these kinds of industries that, like, it is a pretty small knit community, so in that way it is pretty selective. So I think to kind of give, you know, a huge horde of interns that might want to come in and tell them, oh, all of you, as long as you work hard enough, you're set, you know, you set this expectation, as long as you work hard enough, you know, you'll get in, and that's not necessarily true. And then on top of that, you're going to hit them with, you're not getting pay either. So I don't know. I think it's like the balance, the pros and cons of that don't really add up to me.
Yeah. I mean, I was lucky that I did two paid. One, I got a stipend, and then one was paid. It was 10 an hour at Scholastic. Which was like, what? 22, yeah! Yeah! I remember with my office, like, all kinds of money to spend at Old Navy. But I'm wondering what is the standard now? I don't even know what minimum wage is. I know there's been a big fight over what minimum wage
in
is.
In New York, it's 9.
Mm-hmm. No, we've gone up to 15. I think we've gone up to 15. We're definitely not 9.
They, because, yeah. Well, ours, I don't know if you want me to say this, I apologize, but ours is 9, and they said that was the minimum wage,
yeah,
so.
I had the same experience. Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if the 15
is either relatively
after,
new,
yeah,
or like not effective. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Or maybe it's effective for certain states. Because there's been so many arguments in terms of what minimum wage is. Mm-hmm. It's not, we haven't even gotten to the federal. It's really been a state by state thing. So if we're looking at minimum wage in that way, it still seems kind of bugged out to be paying interns minimum wage in New York City, of all places. And I'm glad we're talking about the monetary, because I feel like that's just not spoken about. People don't talk about what their salaries are. People don't talk about, when I started in the industry, 2003, and that's when I got my full-time job. Before that, I did a year of internships. All of us editorial assistants started at 27. Yeah, that was like the standard, and we couldn't negotiate that. You know, it was pretty much 27, maybe 28 if you were good at like putting it home. Like, I need that extra K, you know. And then I talked to some not interns, but editorial assistants who are still starting at that level. And then there are others at certain publishers that are making 35K. And so, you know, I was looking at Glassdoor, which is a really cool site. There are many sites like it. Glassdoor.com, listeners. And you can put in your whatever job title, and then it tells you the salary that people put in. So it's not necessarily everyone's salary, but people who chose to put it in anonymously. And I put in mine. And then seeing mine compared to other industries, well, not industries, other imprints, I saw that I was making more as a production editor than senior production editors were making at other imprints. So it really does kind of get in your head, like, wow, okay, this is, I can never leave.
I can't. It's not going to get better.
Right? Do they at least give free bagels after that? Is there a way to like do a cost-benefit analysis? But I really want to encourage people in this larger discussion to think about the monetary and to think about negotiation. Mm-hmm. And do you feel like you would feel comfortable negotiating, or you would? Because I've talked to editorial assistants too who took what they wanted because they were so afraid that this wasn't going to happen for them. And usually they were POC or otherwise marginalized. So they didn't want to fight, you know. They didn't want to be like, oh, da-da. And then they get into the position and realize, A, the person before them made more money. B, the position is actually two positions. Mm-hmm. So do you feel like you could negotiate, or do you feel like, oh, I'm still new?
I think the best advice that I've gotten throughout the summer in regards to potentially moving forward in publishing is to stand up for yourself, because no one else is going to do it for you. Mm-hmm. And to be open to talking to your peers about salary, because you're entitled to a knowledge of what is going on around you and how comparable salaries are. And also, you also just shouldn't be embarrassed to know what you've earned and to ask for what you've earned. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a gender problem as well, just like females, like unfortunately being conditioned to learn that being assertive is like a non-feminine or like unlikable trait. And I think that's something that I would definitely actively combat.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. Yeah, it is. It's just so hard sometimes because you don't want to be so close to getting the job and then fight for a higher pay, and there's someone else right waiting in the wings that didn't fight and then gets it. Mm-hmm. You know, especially when you're just starting out, you want to get that job, so you want to say, yes, I'll take it, even if it's just so that you can get in your foot in the door. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an issue in that. We are a little afraid, at least in the beginning. Once we maybe get the job and have been there a couple months or a year, there might be more room for negotiation. But as it stands, I think a lot of people would be afraid to push for more, which is unfortunate.
I think going off of that point, something that I've also kind of like learned the 2 months that I've been there is kind of hearing other editorial assistant stories and, you know, their experience getting into it. And it is, I think, one of those things where salary and negotiating isn't something you necessarily want to do right off the bat, which I agree with. But I think that one of the things with publishing is that you might be able to get that entry-level position, but it is very hard to move up from there. Mm-hmm. And negotiating, like, once you're actually there. So I think that is something that people coming into it don't necessarily know. But it's something to be concerned about when you get there. So.
Absolutely. Saeed Jones had mentioned this, that there was this like the corrective salary increase, which is a hard negotiation. Mm-hmm. So it makes more sense to try to get that salary when you come in, because it is harder to get more than a few thousand. Or maybe it just depends on who you are, because you know, sometimes you get promoted and they say, well, that's as much as we promote people. Glass.com said I should be making this much. It's like, we don't care. So moving away from the monetary conversation, even though I love talking about this stuff, I don't want to talk about the downside, unless you want to talk about the downsides of interning. But I do want to focus on the upsides. What are you learning? What are you enjoying? in terms of being an intern, I think it means different things to different people. I know when at my previous publisher, I remember the editorial assistants were so happy when the interns came because they're like, great, I don't have to do this here. And they would give them the worst jobs, you know, like you do the permissions, you do the you do all these things and then I can focus on them because it was bogging them down. Mm-hmm. So then the interns were really kind of assistants to the assistants. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, in terms of what your roles are respectively, are you getting that knowledge you think is helpful as an intern? And if you're not, do you feel like, what are suggestions you have for what people can offer you in these positions of not just being the quote unquote peon, but actually this is gonna help you get this position so that when you go on interviews, you know what you're talking about?
I can start. I guess my experience is, yes, I've definitely been given, as you say, like kind of like the heavy load that the mm-hmm. assistants don't necessarily want to do, which I appreciate it in the sense that I know that it's preparing me for the role that I would be getting if it was full time. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate, I really appreciate getting whatever they may have. I think that at a certain point though, you know, you don't want to just keep doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I think as an intern, you definitely need to be able to be very proactive in asking, you know, who your direct manager is as far as what other kind of, you know, work do they have that you can help mm-hmm. with that they might not necessarily have thought of that you might want to do or can do. Mm-hmm. And I mean, because I work with two different imprints, so I've been trying to, you know, ask a lot of people within my imprint who do different jobs, whether that's you know, the art director, or if I can help, you know, any way in design or help on different departments and aspects. I think that many times, you know, your coworkers aren't necessarily thinking about, you know, Manny needs to hit this, this, and this. They're just worried about the projects that need to get done. So it's very up to you to reach out and make sure you're mm-hmm. learning all the different aspects. Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget the second week of my internship. I found myself with nothing left to do from what my direct manager had given me, and I decided this is a great chance for me to send out an email to everyone on the team asking them to just throw projects my way. And I got so many emails that day. So many people had things they did not want to do that they were willing to throw at me. And I think from there I learned that yes, it's okay to ask, but at the same time, be specific in your asking. Have a goal in mind of what kind of jobs you do want to perform, and then try to find the people who are doing jobs similar to that, so that mm-hmm. when you're going out to people in your team, you're actually going up to people who have a talent or a job that you'll find an interest mm-hmm. in learning. Mm-hmm. You don't want to put out that email to everybody and then get stuck with that one woman who does the one part of the job in that area that you're not really mm-hmm. all that fond of, or that you don't think is going to push you in your actual job force look, you know, looking for your job. That was a weird way of wording it. So yeah, definitely try to be specific, and I guess, yeah, don't be afraid to ask your direct manager over and over and over again, because chances are they have a million things on their plate and they will get back to you with what you want to do. They will email you that PDF that you really want to look at, but sometimes you have to give them a little extra nudge. Don't be afraid.
I really admire your moxie for sending out the mass email.
I was really going for it.
But truly, and that's a perfect example, initiative is everything. I think that it's easy to kind of get swamped and think that all you can do is like stay in your corner with the Excel spreadsheet and the packing tape. But truly, I think that, at least in my experience, colleagues are generally very welcoming to showing an intern how the industry works and letting them help pitch in on a project, so long as you've turned in like high quality and like persistent and regular work before then. I think it's also a good idea to take every opportunity to learn in a way that doesn't necessarily involve asking somebody. So as valuable as it is to ask like your marketing director, like, hey, could I, like, I don't know, could you show me how like this works and how like this part of the industry interacts with this part that we're also working with? Mm-hmm. I've also found it really valuable to like scroll back on emails of previous interns and learn how they did things, listening on meetings while not necessarily, I guess, interrupting the meetings. And yeah, mm-hmm. I've also just found that like I'm in a small house, so my experience could be a little bit different, but thus far, people that I've worked with have been so welcoming of my curiosity. I honestly just like asked somebody one day, like, could you tell me how subrights work? And then the CEO of the company called me into his office and gave me like this like presentation on what we do with subrights. And then I got an origin story of the whole company as well, just as a cherry on top. Yeah, so just ask questions and be gracious and look for every opportunity to grow.
And also let people know you exist. Because I think that's something you'll just see this face. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you're the face, and they're like, who's that? And I'm like, oh, that's an intern. You know what I mean? And you don't want to be the intern. You want to be Pia Talia Manny, you know? You want people to know your name. And I think that's also, it's instinctual to you, but it's also a responsibility of the manager, too. And I don't want to discount the managers in this whole scenario. Because I think the revolving door is an issue. And that's why I say make sure people know who you are. Because maybe someone will say, oh, I remember that intern from last year was really cool. And he, she always this. And they were blah, blah, blah. Or for me at Scholastic, they said, oh, do you want to do freelance for us? So I did freelance for them for like another 8 months, which was nice. So I was like, I'm gonna get some money because I don't have a job. And then, you know, I mean, it didn't necessarily lead to a full-time job at Scholastic, but it was money so that people recognize that, oh yeah, that intern still does this work for us. So yeah, I think there's just like a lot of stuff that you can get from it. What has been your favorite thing so far?
My favorite thing, I'm the managing editorial intern again, mm-hmm. So I like going through final PDF checks, which is basically when you're going through a PDF, a printed out page, against an actual book that's already been published, because we're switching it from the hardcover book that's actually been published to a paperback. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's a lot of fun because you get to see just the tiny little changes and details, and you're trying to make sure everything's perfect. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you do get to read a little bit of the material. And for someone like me who's actually really interested in the kind of material that my house publishes, oh, it's just so much fun. That's my favorite.
I think for me, the two most exciting things that I've done that I've loved was having like brainstorming sessions and discussions with my one editor. We were dealing with, I think, like really young children's books, like, you know, kids like 1 to 3 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just really fun to go through different, like the author will like edit it and then send it to the editor, and then the editor will be like, hey Manny, like what do you think of the changes? And then she'll bring me into her office and we got to talk about it. That was one of my favorite things. And also actually just sitting through acquisitions meetings, I think mm-hmm. they're extremely interesting. Mm-hmm. And I love hearing the editors pitch the books that they're excited about, and that, you know, because they went through the process of wanting to, you know, get the book, get it ready for this presentation, so they're excited about it. Mm-hmm. And it's cool to hear sales and marketing their perspective and their opinion on it and how they think it's going to do. And then mm-hmm. when it works, it's just like it clicks and it's really cool.
I like sales and marketing's opinions as well, because I'm on the marketing side of things. Yeah, I would say that is actually my favorite part. Brainstorming ideas for how to sell a book mm-hmm. is wonderful. I feel like I'm like in a spaceship making a battle plan for like having as many kids as possible to love this book. And I think that just brings out this like effervescent enthusiasm mm-hmm. in me. And also like a really like critical reading in order to, because like I'm reading this F&G, or this like early proof of a book, mm-hmm. Like with the eyes of a teacher, with the eyes of a librarian, mm-hmm. and also a child, and that's so engaging for me.
Cool. I like catching errors.
No, oh, me too. Unfortunately for me, they say that a lot of the catching errors has to be saved for the freelancers, so I have to see some of it and just let it go. And that's hard. Yeah. I'm like, oh, can't I just circle it? And they're like, save that for the first pass. Save it.
And then if they miss it, you get all judgy. Like, I got
that. In the final PDFs, I've caught quite a few. And then my direct manager, he's just like, it should have never made it to you. It should have never made it that far. And I'm like, well, aren't you glad that it did and I've caught it at least? Could have been worse.
And that's how you make a name for yourself.
I know. Exactly. Eagle eyes, Talia. Eagle eyes.
That was it. You remember Eagle eyes? She's
awesome. She found that humidity was spelled wrong and she got it like that.
You know? Liaison was spelled wrong too. It was ridiculous. So I've been asked to ask you, what can the industry do better in terms of finding more marginalized representation? And it's interesting because it feels as though the industry, and I talk about it as this amorphous thing that I've been, like, I'm a cog part of, a cog in the wheel of, but there might not be an easy answer, right? There's might not be like, oh, you just do this and you're good, you know. But beyond these calls, because there's, for every one thing, there's, you know, something else where someone's like, I went online and I said, I want marginalized rep. And he was like, you need to do more than that. And I was like, okay. So I went to this group and that said that, well, you need to do. So, you know, there's, I can understand there's this constant feeling of backlash where we're like, you need to do more than that. And it's kind of easy for me to say, you guys suck. You need to work harder. It's not that hard. It's not that easy either. That's what I'm saying. But what do you think are steps that the industry could make to make this happen more? You know, I mean, you all heard about the We Need Diverse Books. How did that happen? Was that a fluke? Did someone tell you? Were you online a lot? You know, because not everyone hears about it. Not everyone knows that this exists. So how do we help in this regard? Tell us how to help you.
I actually found out about underrepresentation in publishing before I found out about publishing. So I would say that outreach did not get to my part of Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm. But it got to you.
It did. It was fantastic, but I had to look for it.
Just a funny picture of being on, like, the Times, like, publishing is highly underrepresented. Oh, what's this about? Maybe this is a career choice.
This might be a good time to break in.
Just a lot of, like, optimism going into that direction. I would say that if a school has a center for students of color, definitely outreach should be targeted there because they tend to be, I mean, this would vary by school, but I would say that they're generally supportive and safe spaces for students of color who are at that university. Mm-hmm. To address socioeconomic diversity, which I think should also be talked about more, I think, okay, one, pay your interns, please. They're so dedicated and willing to learn. And
pay them more than minimum wage.
Yes,
like, unless minimum wage is like $80 like an hour. $80 an hour.
Not playing.
Not for the month of June.
Yeah, but like peer interns, and I have also found it really comforting when those like online like applications say that or offer to give advice on finding housing in New York City, and I know that that's a small gesture, but especially coming from somebody who's so far away from New York, the prohibitive pricing of being able to commute to a job in publishing is a major push factor for a lot of people who might otherwise be considering the industry.
Well, I think you're lucky with this group right here of three interns because we have Pia from Lee & Low, which is clearly a group that's working on diversity and succeeding. And our group actually has taken the steps, I'm pretty sure, in the last year or two to step it up because, well, if you look at our intern pool, it is incredibly diverse. I for one, think that there's maybe one white person there. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's really great to me, especially because someone on my direct team was an intern 2 years ago, and she said, oh, when I was an intern, it was just white girls, and she's a white girl. Mm-hmm. So just to see that change in only 2 years is really astounding. And you have to know that they must have looked through the applications and mm-hmm. really specifically looked for people that were diverse to make this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it has to come to that. Maybe mm-hmm. it does have to come to them specifically looking at their pool mm-hmm. and trying to choose in such a way that it's not one way or the other, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It can't be 50% white and then 50% everybody else. Mm-hmm. It just can't.
I guess I wanted to also, express my experience with hearing about, like, we need diverse books, and as far as, like, the underrepresentation was, I think HarperCollins also did a good job by, on the application page, I can't remember exactly where, but they had a link saying, if you want to apply for a grant, you can check out We Need Diverse Books. I remember seeing the link, and that's how I heard about it. Yeah. So when I saw that, I was like, I had no idea this was here.
This is amazing.
This is great. So that was cool. That I'm very thankful for HarperCollins for doing that. Mm-hmm. And this is something that me and Tali were actually talking on the train on the way here about this question, because I think it is somewhat of a difficult, you know, solution. I don't think there's an easy way to go about it. But I do think that at some point, a solution has to be hiring more diverse people at higher level positions, mm-hmm. because if you have those people that are more cognizant of the underrepresentation, they're the ones who are in charge that are going to be able to make these changes and these actions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think, again, it starts at the intern pool, and, you know, interns, you know, make it a little bit easier to work up, you know, make it a little bit easier mm-hmm. to work up. And then once you have that, you know, spread out in the industry at high levels, I think that will be good steps together.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, outreach is an external function, but I really think that the drive to change has to be intrinsic. Mm-hmm. And something that I really admire about Lee and Low is that every few months, the entire company makes space to talk about dismantling structures of racism within publishing and having these hard conversations. And I know that these conversations are not comfortable for everybody, but mm-hmm. comfort can breed stagnation, and how else can we grow from where we are right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was kind of like what Jill Petty, who was on the most recent episode, mm-hmm. and I said, we keep talking about the word diversity, right? So we're like, we want to diversify, but she made the great point, and I've said this as well, is that we're not talking about what causes the systematic biases. Mm-hmm. So by not talking about those biases, we're just kind of it's the band-aid solution is what I call it. It's like, oh, well, let's just get all these people now as interns and editorial assistants and maybe cap it at mid-management level, mm-hmm. but then not still have that overarching, like you're saying, people at very, very CEOs, VPs, and whatnot who aren't representative of the community you want. Perceivably the community you want in this industry, rather than just being able to say, we'll see, our publicity manager is this. And then also you have the issue with diversity, I'm using quotes, everybody, and visible diversity. You know, being POC is visible diversity, but then there are people who are what can be, you know, white passing. So then what are we doing about the LGBTQ community, the transgender community, the disabled community? Because when you do job applications now, there is that, tell us what color you are, do you have a disability or not? And some people are just like, I don't want to say if I have a disability. And then speaking with someone offline, they were talking about, we couldn't name anyone we knew who was openly transgender in the industry, outside of one press, a very small niche press, Topside Press, that does do stuff on transgender, sexuality, LGBTQ issues. We could not name anyone who was open and out mm-hmm. and transgender. So it does muddle the field, because it's easy, quote unquote, to get POCs. It's easy to identify. It's like, I got a Mexican, I got a Taiwanese person, I got black, I'm good. You know, but it's like, but they're all straight, they're all cisgender, they're all abled. And then we're not getting into that intersectionality. Mm-hmm. And that gets harder, because you can't put this, like, so are you gay? You know, you can't put that on a job application. You know, you can't ask if they're disabled, but again, someone could say, I don't want to tell you if I'm disabled. So, yeah. I'm not saying we're going to answer all this today. and in the 2 years I've been doing this podcast. But I just want to kind of like reiterate that aspect of like, I think the industry goes for the Band-Aid solution, and the Band-Aid solution is to put people of color. It's very easy to be representative of people of color, and it's not easy to be representative of what we are, you know, intersectionality-wise and all that stuff. So that does get harder. It does get harder.
Even, I was going to say, even some of the books that get published, I know I was going through one of these books that we did about a transgender boy, and I thought that the book was really amazing, phenomenal. But then once I looked up the author, that person wasn't transgender. Mm-hmm. And it becomes this question of, how is that story going to be seen? How is this story going to be told? Some child's going to read this, look up the author, think that they've found someone with their voice, their personality, and it's not, you know? Mm-hmm. So we also need to make a conscious effort to actually tell these stories from the faces of the people who have lived them.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, as cisgender people, probably won't catch all those, you know, microaggressions, you know. If you've been following me on Twitter, folks, you know about this particular book that I want to burn in hell. And it's okay, because I said that on Twitter. I stand by that comment. And, no one black touched that book. Mm-hmm. We're around. Don't know how that happened. Mm-hmm. You know, no one black touched that book, and it's one of the most offensive books I've ever read. Mm-hmm. And that's saying something, because I've read Heart of Darkness, and that I might be blocking out Heart of Darkness. Like, wasn't that bad? And then I'll reread it. I was like, this is horrible. So yeah.
I think it's important to remember that when we're talking about diversity, what we're really talking about is inclusivity. And I think it's easier to achieve some like superficial semblance of one, the former, without actually working to achieve the latter.
Yeah. But I'm very happy to hear about your circles. Like, your respective publishers seem to be more representative in the ways that they know how to thus far, that you feel comfortable in your environments, that you're learning stuff. Mm-hmm. And your internships have been 3 months?
A little over 2 months.
Yeah. Do you feel like that's enough?
Personally, I didn't. I mean, I would like it to be longer, because I think that, yes, maybe, I don't know, I don't think there's ever really a cap for learning, but there's definitely something to be said for being like immersed in something for a long time, and that you're going to get a different experience working at a place for, you know, 3 years versus 1 year, let's say. So I think with time always comes more experience and more learning. So I think 2 months is somewhat of a short period of time. So I would have liked to see that longer.
Yeah, I think once you hit 2 months, you're starting to really feel comfortable with your team. You're starting to think that you can really go for the big questions, start on some bigger projects with people without feeling like you're stepping on any toes. Mm-hmm. And it's sad that you hit that place of comfortableness and you feel like this is your chance to really break through, and then it just kind of ends. Yeah. And you have to hope that they'll keep in contact and that the fall intern won't just replace you and it'll be like you were never there.
Yeah. We gotta keep remembering eagle eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Remember eagle eyes, Talia. She remembers you.
I'm actually going back to school in September, so I have to leave. But it'll certainly be bittersweet.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so two and a half months, as it sounds like?
Yeah,
2.5, like 10 weeks or so. Would 3 months at least seem better? With more money, obviously. But 3 months, June, July, August?
Yeah, and I think when you look at a resume, 2 months seems very short, too. Especially when you think of a semester in school or something.
Yeah, because those are, what, four?
Yeah, like three to four. Yeah. So that's...
So technically a fall intern
is going to get more experience
than a summer intern. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I'm sensing is the industry should make these longer.
Yes. longer.
For summer interns with more money.
Mm-hmm. With a little more money, a little longer, just a little more of everything.
I'll go to like the publishing court meetings. Mm-hmm. This is their demand.
Just a little bit.
More money. Longer internships. Well, okay, so you two graduated. Mm-hmm. Yes? Okay. So, feasibly, you can go for those fellowships. Like, I know Harper is, maybe I'm getting it wrong, but I believe Harper had, like, this 8-9 month rotation program. Maybe I'm getting it wrong with another Big Five.
But Simon and Schuster?
Okay.
I think,
that's
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I've actually, one of the other We Need Diverse Books interns, her name is Julie. She's at Simon and Schuster, and she does that. And I think that sounds like an amazing mm-hmm. program for especially somebody like us who really loves publishing but is only getting one look into one category of it.
Yeah.
So that's something that I think almost every publishing house should do. That would mm-hmm. be amazing if they would all do something like that. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. not us, no, not yet.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Play Maybe
messy.
Someday.
Play messy.
Yeah. And if they did, I would 100% reapply. Remember me?
Even if Harper doesn't do it, it is in the industry.
It is,
so you
yeah.
could look into that, especially mm-hmm. now that you've graduated. And it is paid, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go, Eagle Eyes.
Eagle Eyes, get there.
By the end of this podcast, everyone will have a code name.
Yeah.
Pia, do you think you would do, would you be able to balance an internship with your coursework?
All the way in Providence? Probably not.
Okay.
But I am.
Okay, I thought you were in California.
Oh,
I know that there
okay.
are some publishers in California.
Yeah, there
so,
are. And that's
yeah.
it's great that there's some geographical diversity in the
mm-hmm.
industry. But I am in sweet little Providence, Rhode Island.
Okay.
So I don't think I would be continuing to pursue a publishing internship.
Okay.
That being said, I'm really thankful to have a 9-month-long period during which I can form sort of like a vantage point
mm-hmm.
on publishing and be able to evaluate the summer and feel and I guess see or feel out if this would be a good direction for me to go after graduation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So y'all are gonna
yeah.
do rotational assistant programs. Ooh. This is happening.
Yeah,
I would love it.
You're gonna come
I'm
back
gonna
next summer.
Study.
And see. So thank you all for being on the podcast.
Thank you
wasn't
for having
bad.
Us.
Would you like to say how people can reach out to you or contact you if you happen to be on social media? No pressure.
I mean, you can reach me on Twitter, at Manny Blasco, simply.
You can find me on Instagram, talia.chavez, and I also have a Bookstagram at bookmistakes, because I like to find book mistakes, and then post pictures of the books, circling the mistakes.
And you can also find me on Twitter, at La Pia en Rose, like the French song.
Oh, that is so cute.
So, La, and then my name, P-I-A, en Rose.
That's really interesting.
I love puns. Enjoy. You'll get a lot of puns.
I love Pia for puns.
And alliterations, apparently.
Well, thanks again, and this is one of three wonderful episodes with the We Need Diverse Books interns. And thank you, We Need Diverse Books, for paying them. That's
thank
kind
you.
Of
thank
important.
You.
Thank you. Thank you.
So thanks again for listening. And again, this is Minorities in Publishing. And you can find it at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com or Minorities in Pub. Thank you.